Alright, welcome to Everything Finance, where we break down everything that has to do with your finances, not just through headlines, but through systems, markets, and the people who understand how to position themselves within them. Because in today's world, understanding money is no longer optional. And today's episode is about something that has been around for thousands of years, but is becoming relevant again in a very different way. Gold, because traditionally gold has been seen as a store of value, a hedge, and a defensive asset. But now there is a shift happening, a new way of thinking about gold, and not just as something you hold, but something that can generate yield. So the real question becomes, is gold evolving from passive asset into an income producing one? And today we are joined by someone operating right at the center of that shift. We are joined by Grayson. Grayson is a seasoned investment strategist and wealth management expert with over 2 decades of experience navigating the global market. He is the fund manager of Gold Rush Yield Fund, a private investment fund focused on generating yield on gold and silver, allowing investors to earn interest in gold. What makes this approach unique is that it combines alternative asset strategy, portfolio construction, risk management, and long-term wealth preservation. He's also known for breaking down complex financial concepts into practical and understandable insights. This is a conversation about the future of money, the role of gold in modern portfolios, and how investors can think differently about diversification.
Thanks for having me, Joseph. I appreciate your time.
All right. A lot of people use money every day but don't fully understand how it works. So let's start simple. What is money really?
Well, if you go back to the basics, in economics class, they probably told you that gold was a unit of account, a store of value, and a medium of exchange. So let's start with unit of account. Well, unless you're in barter and you say, well, I've got 12 chickens and I want your cow, and you're accounting for the cow trade with 12 chickens, you might want to say, well, instead of giving you 12 chickens, how about I give you $100, a unit of account? And then the medium of exchange comes in. Well, I'm accounting the cow is worth $100. I'll give you that $100 as a medium of exchange rather than having to give you the 12 chickens. And then, of course, a store of value as time goes on, and that's really interesting in this day and age. But lots of different things have been used as money historically, but the store of value thing is what renders a lot of monies unusable or unexpandable. Historically, wheat has been used as money. Well, wheat isn't a store of value because it'll start to rot, so on and so forth. So that's basically what money is, and we've been in a US dollar dominated monetary system since the end of the Second World War now. So most people consider money the US dollar.
All right, thank you so much for that basic explanation. Gold and silver has been volatile and relatively high of recent, like let's say from the past few years. What does that mean for everyday investors right now?
For everyday investors that are involved in gold and silver, it's kind of unnerving. You rewind a couple of years, and the Federal Reserve poured trillions of dollars onto the world economy during COVID. And some people said, hey, there's only so long we can get away with just borrowing and spending and conjuring currency units out of thin air. So people bought a lot of gold and silver over the last few years. Well, in late last year, early this year, gold and silver rocketed higher, all-time highs by a wild margin. And now they've pulled back, silver pulled back more than 50%. So people who were buying gold and silver for the right reasons now are thinking, wow, well, I should have sold it. Maybe I'd buy it back if I had sold it, but I didn't sell anything. So people are feeling yanked around and feel like they have to be speculators to make any money in the gold and silver markets. So it can be unnerving.
I thank you for that. We've been hearing some terms like de-dollarization and re-dollarization. What should we know about them, and how should it concern investors today?
Well, so there are two forces at work. One of them de-dollarization, as you said, and one of them a dollarization. How those net each other out, or which force gets the upper hand, only time will tell. De-dollarization is going on because central banks are buying gold, central banks around the world. Traders are using gold. Traders in crude oil, traders in commodities are using other currencies. They're essentially trying to get away from the US dollar as the dominant monetary unit. But on the other side of it, with stable coins, dollars are getting removed from the US banking system and put on the internet. It's what a stable coin is. An Ether is basically a US dollar that's on the blockchain. It's crypto. It's on the internet rather than in the US banking system. But for a lot of people that don't trust their banks all over South America, all over Africa, all over Asia, they don't trust their banks. They'd rather use dollars that are on the internet through the stablecoin network. So there's a dollarization going on. Again, time will tell which horse wins this race or how this rolls out. No one knows. But the dollarization side of it is relatively new for the financial media. De-dollarization, the financial media has been talking about for a decade.
All right, thank you so much.
Hope that helps.
What does real diversification actually look like in a portfolio today?
Well, diversification, if we're talking about total portfolio management, diversification, the granddaddy of portfolio management is a true diversification because when you're talking about stocks and bonds, they've started running together a lot over the last couple of decades, where you rewind to where the typical 60-40 portfolio was developed. 60% of your assets should be in the stock market, 40% of your assets should be in the bond market, or vice versa, depending on your risk tolerance. That's not really that great of diversification. They may go together a lot more than you would expect. Gold has really emerged as a diversifying asset within that portfolio. And we're on the cutting edge of adding an income component to gold that has historically been a wonderful diversifier because it marches to the beat of its own drummer. Sometimes it goes up with other assets or down with other assets. Sometimes it does something completely different.
Wow, that's insightful. What role do you think precious metals actually play in a modern investment portfolio? Is it for protection, growth, or for something else?
Well, everyone needs to own some gold. I mean, gold is money, everything else is credit, including the US dollar. So when you have central banks that have the capacity to create so many currency units on a whim, you have to own some gold, period. What we're introducing, and it's new, but not really new, for the last decade, we've been introducing an income component to gold. If you can get a mitigated risk income component, so you've got the inflation hedge of gold and silver, but also you've got income coming in. So like I was talking about earlier, gold and silver investors, it's been really volatile. It can be unnerving when silver goes from 120 to 55. But if you have your silver deployed into a mechanism that you're earning more silver on, it removes a lot of that anxiety that you didn't sell at the high. You don't have to buy back on the low. It's an asset that's producing for you. Over time, in US dollar terms, it'll certainly go higher, but it may take years.
What are the different ways you think investors can gain exposure to gold, and how can they compare?
Well, as I say, I mean, I think everyone should own some gold if they're building a long-term portfolio. And I've been in money management for decades now. The number one mistake that I see people making in investment management is having no basic plan at all. That's the number one mistake. Number two mistake I see is people not having an emergency fund. So whether you're in Europe, Asia, Africa, America, whatever currency you use to pay your rent, to pay your electricity, buy gas for your car, whatever the case may be, wherever you are, you need to have an emergency fund built up. From there, that's where I suggest part of the portfolio should always include gold. I can introduce people to mechanisms to get an income on their gold, and my fund for accredited investors, that's exactly what we do, is we aggregate assets, we acquire gold and silver, the actual bullion, and we deploy it into leases and bonds that are paying interest in gold and silver terms, in ounces, rather than US dollars or any other currency. So it's kind of a crawl, walk, run. I hope I'm answering the question that you asked.
Yes, yes, Grayson. Thank you so much. This idea of earning interest on gold, is it something new or has it existed for long?
Well, understand that, like I say, gold is money, always has been money, always will be money. Everything else is credit. People have aggregated gold since the dawn of civilization. And even today, 10 years ago, 100 years ago, central banks, bullion banks, rich individual investors that have a stack of gold, they've leased out, loaned out their gold as a capital asset and gotten a gold or an interest rate on their gold. So that's been happening. That never quit happening. But what is relatively new is a marketplace so that individual investors don't have to go find someone that wants to borrow in gold terms. Individual investors can come to a marketplace, deposit gold and silver, and there's a mechanism to aggregate their gold and silver and then lease and loan out to businesses that is how they would prefer to get their capital. In ounces, and they'll pay interest on that. So that's a 10-year-old mechanism here in America, and it's expanding worldwide, and it's expanding parabolically. So as time goes on, it is more and more available to individual investors.
Wow, that's beautiful, because this actually challenges the traditional view of gold as a non-yielding asset. How developed do you think the market is for gold-based yield strategies today?
How developed is this market that I'm describing?
Yes, yes.
Okay, so on the lease side, and leases and bonds are two completely different financial instruments. When you're talking about a lease, someone else is paying you an interest rate to use your asset. You still own it. It's exactly like owning homes that people rent or lease from you to live in. If they're not making good on their side of the contract, they're not paying the rent, they're not making good on the lease, it's still your house and they have to leave. Well, that's a mechanism going on in the gold world because businesses that use gold, jewelers, smelters, refiners, bullion dealers, there are a lot of businesses that have gold as part of their inventory. It's part of their business. Well, that's a wildly expensive inventory. So they want to lease, pay someone a gold interest rate to use someone else's gold. So again, this has been going on forever and it never stopped. But as far as a marketplace where individual investors can come in, that's been going on for 10 years and it's very well developed. Now on the bond side, that's a different financial instrument and that's almost exclusively gold mines. If you're a gold company and you own real estate with a lot of gold in the ground, more than likely, you need help, you need capital, you need somebody else's money to pay to get that gold out of the ground and refine it. It can cost a lot of money to mine gold. The concern comes in for these gold mining companies when the price of gold rockets like it did over the last couple of years. If they're borrowing US dollars or some other currency to get gold out of the ground, maybe their numbers look great now, considering the high price of gold. But what if the price of gold goes down a lot in US dollars or in euros or whatever currency? Well, now that mining company is in a lot of trouble because they still owe US dollars. And when they did the math, borrowed the dollars, they did the math of how much the gold in the ground would be worth. Well, now it's worth a lot less. They still owe that same number of US dollars. So they might be in big financial trouble. But if those same mining companies say, hey, I've got a million ounces of gold in the ground, well, let's borrow 500,000 ounces of gold. We'll sell that to buy trucks, pay payroll, get the mine running. They drag the 1,000,000 ounces of gold out of the ground. They pay the 500,000 ounces of gold back to their creditor. They're still holding $500,000 or 500,000 ounces of gold. So they don't have any price risk. They're not going to go insolvent, which they might if they borrow dollars and the price of gold goes drastically down. So I hope that makes sense. There's obviously more risk in a mechanism like that because as investors, we're lending someone the gold. They're taking the gold. They're selling it and using the money to buy trucks, pay payroll, like I said. So the gold's gone. We have to do our due diligence to make sure that that mining company has the capacity to get gold out of the ground and pay us our ounces back plus interest, and which we do very well, but there's still risk in that. So they're paying a much higher interest rate to us when we're actually lending the gold to them, and there's significantly more risk. When someone's just using our gold, and we've got a on the lease side of it that I just explained, when somebody's using our gold and we have an inventory mechanism to make sure the gold is still there the whole time, very low risk, lower interest rate for the investor. I hope I'm making sense with that.
Yes, Grayson. Yes. Thank you so much for explaining that and for sharing that knowledge with us. Gold is still like an unfamiliar territory for a lot of investors today. And for our young investors or private investors, how much do you think they realistically need in capital to start investing in gold and start making yield from
Sure. And everybody's got to take into consideration. I don't consider this investing advice because I don't know your personal financial situation, but I can give some general guidelines. I think for younger investors, especially, to have 15, 20% of your net worth denominated in gold, I certainly as a guideline, a starting point, I think that could make sense. Some people it might not be that high, some people it may be higher. For older investors, the concept of buying gold is probably more of a wealth transfer to the next generation idea. So we might still start with 10 or 15% of their portfolio. Maybe they're not in such of a need of an inflation hedge like a younger investor is. But again, that's just a starting point. Everyone, like I say, has to start with a good plan, has to next step is going to be a good emergency fund, and from there start building. But as far as if you own gold and you want to start deploying it into leases and bonds, like I'm talking about, a starting point for that is generally about 10 ounces of gold. My fund, we have a little bit higher minimum than 10 ounces. We manage the portfolio of leases and bonds that I just described. We start with a little higher minimum than that. But that's it. Those are some generalizations that might help people.
All right, thank you so much. And lastly, for today, you are the fund manager of the Gold Rush Yield Fund, a private investment fund focused on generating yield on gold and silver. How do you help these young investors, or rather our audience today who are investors, how can you help them? How can you help onboarding them into understanding these strategies of investment, and who is this strategy best suited for?
Sure. Well, how I can help, I mean, people can go to our website, AndoCap, AndoCap.com. Got a lot of videos. I've got a lot of educational material on the website that people can see because, like you mentioned at the very beginning, it's counterintuitive to people that they can get an interest rate on gold. I mean, the most famous investor in the world, Warren Buffett, always complained that gold just sat there. It didn't earn anything. So why would you buy it? Well, he had a point, but it's no longer true. But just realizing that you can get an interest rate on gold, if you want some more education on the logistics of exactly how that happens, again, go to the website. I can help people with that. And we're doing webinars and seminars all the time to help people understand, plain and simple, there's a natural interest rate to gold. Plenty of people use gold and they're willing to pay you an interest rate to use yours. So that's a good mechanism for us to help people. As far as people investing in the fund, that would be a, you know, I'd have to meet with someone individually on that and talk about the parameters of the fund and their financial situation because everyone has to be an accredited investor. But if someone just simply does have 10 ounces and they want to simplify it, I want to lease it out, we have solutions for smaller investors too.
All right. Thank you so much, Grayson, for this beautiful and wonderful conversation where you've highlighted a major shift for us in how we think about money and assets. And what you have made clear to us today is that gold is no longer just a passive store of value. New financial structures are emerging around traditional assets, and true diversification requires thinking beyond conventional portfolio. And one thing that we've learned today is that the financial system is evolving, and investors who understand this shift early have an advantage. And if you want to protect and grow your wealth, you need to understand what money is, how it's changing, and where value is moving. And all this boils down to investing and understanding how investing in gold actually works. And that is what Grayson can is telling us about today. He has already stated different ways he can help in onboarding new investors and educating them about how this method of investment works. Thank you once again, Grayson, for sharing your knowledge with us. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in to Everything Finance. See you in the next episode.